If you're interested in these kind of topics, you're in the right place. Connection Therapy Podcast talks about these and more topics all the time. And on occasion, we have special courses to take the learning further. And I'd like to let you know about one of those coming up in May. Dr. Janet Jones will present 6 neurological reasons for horses' excellence as therapy animals. If you're familiar with the work of Dr. Janet Jones, you're likely aware she has expertise in human brains and horse brains, and she combines her skills to talk about the neuroscience of horsemanship. And it has a lot of contributions to mental health therapy, which is why I'm thrilled she will be presenting this for us in May. Link in the show notes if you'd like to learn more about this event. We'd love to see you there. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. I've spoken a lot about the ways to become a better mental health therapist, and my perspective that some of those ways include learning the language of other mammals, in particular horses and dogs, because it helps us learn more about humans. Thinking about things across species helps us delineate what we naturally focus on because of how we experience the world. And it helps us to consider then how some of those things might be different even within our own species. My guest for this episode exemplifies this topic and will share her expertise about it in a myriad of ways. I've invited Dr. Janet Jones to speak with me today and in the next couple of episodes. And I'll start by introducing her to you. Dr. Janet Jones applies brain science to the training of horses and riders. She earned her PhD from UCLA and taught the neuroscience of perception, language, memory, and thought for 23 years. Janet trained horses at a large stable early in her career, and later she ran a successful horse training business of her own. She has worked with close to 1,000 horses, specializes in green, that would be like new or young horses, and difficult ones. She rides many breeds and disciplines and has competed in hunter, jumper, halter, western riding, and reining. Those are like different ways that horses can be trained to ride. Janet travels all over the world explaining brain-based horsemanship to riders, trainers, veterinarians, farriers, breeders, and equine physiotherapists. She co-teaches large animal behavior at Colorado State University Veterinary School and consults on equine topics with companies such as Disney World and Nissan Motor Corporation. Janet still rides her own horse every day and keeps a few other horses and riders in partial training. She has authored multiple books, including one entitled Understanding Psychological Science, which describes research methods in the field of psychology. She also has a book entitled The Psychotherapist's Guide to Human Memory. And then she has 2 books that are how I ran onto her work. The first is called Horse Brain, Human Brain, The Neuroscience of Horsemanship. And the upcoming one later this year is entitled A Horse's World, A Neuroscientist's Journey into the Equine Mind. So you can see there are many ways that I overlap with Dr. Jones's interests, and I'm thrilled to invite her to the podcast today. Okay, good afternoon, Dr. Janet Jones. It's a pleasure and honor to have you here. And I'd like to just start by asking about the work you're doing now, which to my understanding is you're explaining brain-based horsemanship to a wide variety of audiences, including riders, trainers, veterinarians, farriers, breeders, equine physiotherapists, and even psychologists perhaps like me. And I was curious, what made you consider doing this overall, and specifically, why train writers?
Thank you for having me first, and thank you for your persistence in arranging this interview. It took quite a while to get it all set up, and I really appreciate that. So my whole life, I have had two major passions. Horses are one of them, and brains is the other. And they ran in completely separate paths for most of my life. In fact, I feel a little foolish about the fact that I didn't immediately see the connection between these two things. So it wasn't until sometime around the early 2000s that I began thinking very carefully about applying neuroscience to horsemanship. And those thoughts arose from my training work with clients who kept bringing horses to me with problems and misbehaviors.
Yeah.
By that time, I was steeped in a very long neuroscience career, and I could see that the so-called misbehaviors were actually misunderstandings between two very different types of brains. And I found myself talking to my riding students and to the people who owned the horses that were in training with me more and more about, well, your horse doesn't really see it that way, or, you know, here's what's really going on in his head. Mm-hmm. And so I began steering my horse training business in that direction, applying my ideas to real horses and real riders. And I discovered that they were very effective. And that encouraged me to continue. As soon as I could see that, okay, this is a connection here that is going to be really helpful for both horses and riders. And somewhere along the way, fairly early, I realized that this interaction between horse and human brains was critical for everyone who works with horses. So it's not just about trainers and riders. It's about veterinarians, farriers, barn staff, breeders, drivers, you know, carriage drivers, therapists, and across all disciplines of horse sports. So I basically, the way I think about this is, if you work with horses, and if that horse has a brain, and he does,
right,
you need to know what's happening.
Yeah.
And so that has really kind of gotten my work into a very broad audience. And I like that, because even when I train horses and riders, I don't constrain myself to any particular type of riding. I tend with training to work with young or difficult horses that need a lot of work on foundations, and they're not really ready to go specialize in a particular discipline yet. But even among those that are ready to specialize, I work with Western disciplines, English disciplines, bareback, you know, pretty much everything. I just feel like if it has to do with a horse, then the ultimate goal is to understand our connection with that horse and not to try to say, oh, well, I only ride dressage, or I only ride jumpers, or I only ride reiners, or whatever, you know, the discipline might be. And I think that that's something that is actually missing nowadays in the equine world. It used to be many years ago that cross training was very common, and it was desired. We knew that it prevented repetition injuries. It kept horses sound for a lot longer. It introduced all kinds of variety for the horse and the rider both. And so, you know, I grew up riding all those different disciplines and competing in many of them. And my own horses are taught to do all of those different things. I feel that it's really good for them to do that. Then I think you also asked what made me consider training riders specifically.
Yep. Right.
Well, that might have just grown by accident because I have always trained riders. So I began giving riding lessons when I was very young. And I think that you can't really consider a horse's brain without also considering the handler or rider's brain mm-hmm. in any horse sport. It's not possible to separate them. And I think it's the interaction that is the most critical thing. Mutual communication between two very different classes of brains that are working within a collaborative team. And at extreme levels of our sport, this is intense teamwork that really requires that communication to be on point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm glad to be one of many people who are interested in your work right now. I think what you're doing is applicable in so many ways, and it's an honor to have you here. And so keeping with the spirit of how I came to your work, I have led a couple. Well, one, we just finished a book club for your first book, Horse Brain, Human Brain, The Neuroscience of Horsemanship. And looking forward to doing another book club on your second upcoming book in the fall. And the people that I'm working with are primarily doing equine-assisted therapy, and they're just loving what you said so much of just the awareness and the different kinds of ways that it really changes things when we know more about the brains of our partners in this being horses. And one of the things they talked about a lot is becoming more aware of how the differences in brains means that horses see our environments differently. And so that's what I was wondering if you could highlight now is what are some of the differences in how horses sense their environments from how humans do. And then after, I think the differences to me were the most surprising. So maybe we could start with those and then talk about some of the similarities.
Okay, that's fine. There is a lot of that in Horse Brain, Human Brain. I felt that one of the best ways to introduce the horse world to neuroscience was to kind of surprise people.
It does that.
You need to recognize that when you sit on a horse and look out into the environment, you are not seeing the same thing that your horse is seeing, not by a long shot.
Yeah.
And that is true for other senses also. Mm-hmm. I started with vision, I think, because vision is primary for human brains. Mm-hmm. In fact, one third of the entire human brain is devoted to vision, which is a remarkable proportion.
It sure is.
That we have five or six or, you know, maybe several other senses mm-hmm. that rely on the brain as well.
Yeah, wow.
And because vision is so front and center for us, we often assume that it's the most important sense for other animals too, including horses. But
right.
In fact, smell is the primary sense for horse brains. Smell is quite poor for humans. Horses, on the other hand, have the neurological machinery to smell as well as a bloodhound does.
Mm.
And I'd like to offer a few little bloodhound statistics.
Please. Yep. I love it.
Just to give you an idea of how sensitive this ability to detect odors really is. A bloodhound, and very likely a horse, can smell a scent that was left behind 12 days ago from a distance of 12 miles. They can track that scent for up to 130 miles. And that's the equivalent, that ability to detect one particular scent is the equivalent of being able to find one clean sock in a pile of 2 million dirty socks.
Wow. I'm actually having a reaction right now as I listen to you. Because it really, even I've read some of the facts that you just talked about, but as you set the scene of what that's really like and how that's so different from how we see and even see there, I'm predominantly going towards sight, but how we experience the world and just the sort of implication of our need to start really considering how other species walk the world and their massive difference from just even going out on a hike, let alone, you know, other functions of living. So, yeah. Okay, keep going. I just wanted to highlight that you're making a very good point.
You did, because I think it's very important for all of us to realize that. And then if we look at vision for a minute, and I'm just giving you a few examples. As you know, horse brain, human brain is filled with these kinds of differences. A human eye can adjust from light to dark conditions in about 25 minutes. A horse's eye takes 45 minutes, almost twice as long. So what you and I can see in the inside of a shaded barn or a dim indoor arena, we can see that much better than the horse can when we are entering from bright sunlight outside. And that's something that we often don't think about. We don't really give the horse, we don't accommodate the horse's inability to adjust his vision as quickly as we can adjust our vision.
Right.
Other examples, depth perception is 72 times worse in horses than it is in humans. So if you are a barrel racer or riding hunters or jumpers, you need to understand that your depth perception is very, very important and vastly better than your horses. If you can't see where you should take off, well, then there's a problem that needs to be corrected. Equine brains can't focus visually within about 6 feet of their eyes, despite the fact that we all hold bridles and halters and things right up to the horse's eyes.
Yes,
have a look. Yeah, they can't focus on anything within about 6 feet of their eyes. So they're just seeing a big blurry blob when you do that. But human vision is designed for very close-up work because we hold so many projects in our hands and pull them up close to our eyes. A horse can't do that and doesn't need to do that. Mm-hmm. Then if we look at acuity, which is the ability to see fine details in the world, human acuity is excellent. Equine acuity is not. Horses see a rather fuzzy, blurry world. Their acuity is good enough to make out different objects, of course, but they don't see the very sharp edges and the fine details that we can see. On the other hand, equine motion detection is far better than human motion detection. Mm-hmm. So horses can see tiny, super fast movement that we, with our eyes, cannot pick up. Even if we are sitting right there next to the horse looking at the same scene, that horse is going to see certain movements that we will not be able to see. So those are a few of the, you know, vision-related kinds of things. And I mentioned some of the smell. And the other thing I want to say, because it's a really amazing ability that horses have, equine touch, the ability to perceive very light touch. A horse's brain can detect pressures on her skin that are far lighter than a human fingertip can sense. So if you really think about that, I think there's an example in horse brain, human brain, that where I kind of broke down the mathematics of this to try to create a more realistic way of thinking about it. A horse can sense the pressure of 5 dandelion seeds landing on his withers. A human fingertip cannot do that. at all. You can blow dandelion seeds toward my fingertip for a long, long time. And if I'm blindfolded, I will never know that anything has touched my finger.
Wow.
So I think that's another thing that we have traditionally really not been aware of for horses, that they have this incredible sense of smell and touch, that that's what allows them to understand their worlds and to get around in their worlds. And we're over here emphasizing vision all the time,
right?
Which just is really a weakness in a horse rather than a strength most of the time.
Yeah, from our book club discussions, I know a lot of people were already changing how, especially at this time of year in the spring, when they bring horses from the outside to the inside arena or vice versa, we're already changing their kind of expectations there and going a little more slowly. And then for myself, just the touch part, it's really eye-opening. Again, they're my instinct toward eyes. That's interesting. But it's really awe-inspiring to think about how attuned to me they are just based on my other behaviors. And it stands to reason that if their sight isn't as predominant as humans, that their other senses would be more predominant. But I think a lot of your book is helping myself and others think about how we behave differently as a result.
The nice thing about all this is that there are many easy ways to accommodate a horse's brain once you realize that you do need to do that. So that aspect of it is really nice, that there are a lot of applications that can be very helpful. And one of the things that I always think about when I'm talking about all of the differences, sensory differences, and not just sensory, but differences in memory, intelligence, problem solving, all different kinds of things, emotion, all that. One of the things that always comes back to me is the generosity of a horse, the
yes.
fact that they're even willing to try to collaborate with us and form a team with us when we obviously don't understand how they function very well.
Yes. I've thought something similar about like the jumpers and even just trail riding, like the trust it must take for them. No wonder horses like to stay around their own environments, like in their own barns and their other horses, like the trust it must take to let a human lead them outside of their environment when they're not able to see as well. They might be smelling things that we can't. And so they understand there's threats out there that we can't perceive. And to continue on and sort of be a partner in that is just really encouraging that we can make such bonds with this very special species.
It is. Mm-hmm. And we can create even stronger bonds once we understand what the differences are. And,
yes.
You know, begin working with those rather than against them.
Yeah. Yes. And not take them personally, you know.
Absolutely. Yes. We humans do tend to take things personally and assume that, you know, animals are trying to manipulate us or resist us, all kinds of things that might not actually be the case. I think an awful lot of time the animals just don't understand exactly what we want or what we expect.
Right. Yeah. For guests such as Dr. Janet Jones, I'm partitioning the interviews to specific sections so that listeners can hear the parts they would like to hear and also really let this information sink in. You heard in this part of the interview that even though I'm aware of her work and had just recently studied it, I still get taken aback by some of the things she shared. For me, the implications of what she is saying are so impactful that I need time to consider the implications, and I'm hoping that works for you too. You heard me here continue to make examples out of sight, even though she had just explained to me that by comparison, this is not a relevant example since horses don't have the same predominance on sight as we do. On that note, if you'd like more information about the visual acuity that she mentioned, I actually did a whole podcast episode on that just a few weeks ago. That podcast is number 85, and I will link it in the show notes. And in that episode, I took some of the things she had mentioned in her book and tied them to mental health therapy with humans. So you might be curious to hear more about that. In the next part, we will discuss how we can see signals about nervous system states, specifically fear and other things, in the horse's body language. And then we consider how to see some of those similar things in humans in order to start having this cross-species conversation. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.